prepare yourself for the terror. The prison of madness, where few enter and none return.
Welcome to Unsung Horrors. With Lance. And Erica.
Leave all your sanity behind. It can't help you now.
Welcome to another episode of Unsung Horrors, the podcast where we discuss underseen horror movies, specifically those which have fewer than 1,000 views on Letterboxd. I'm Erica.
And I'm Lance.
And before we get into this week's movie, just a couple of quick reminders. Our Horror Gives Back is officially underway. It is October.
Yes.
The fundraiser for that, for Best Friends Animal Society, the link to that is in our bio in Twitter and Instagram, and also linked on our pinned post on our Facebook page. That's going to be live through November 2nd. You can make your donations anytime up until then. We already got one donation from Mike Esparza. So thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah.
First is always the best.
Yeah. Oh, no.
I appreciate everybody.
You all are the best.
Yeah. But I will remember Mike until I die.
So I've already, you know, started a few of my watches. Off to a good start so far.
Hashtag Horror Gives Back.
Right.
I like everybody sharing. It's awesome to see.
Yes. And then I just... sort of off topic, but I did want to bring this up. There have been some recent Blu-ray release announcements.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that we had anything to do with this.
Well, I am.
Okay, Lance is saying it. So if folks listened to our last Blu-ray wish list episode, our guest Dustin had said, I want a Ju-on box set.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very specific. He had his own name for it. Unfortunately, Arrow didn't go with that, but... we are getting a Ju-on box set. So
you are taking credit. It sounds like you just said you're welcome.
Well, Dustin is taking credit.
Okay.
Should take credit for
it.
I'm not going to take credit for his pick, but there's also a Run and Kill Blu-ray coming from Error 4444, which is one of my favorite Category 3 Hong Kong films.
Yes.
They've just kind of teased that. So I don't know how soon that's coming out, but it was announced. And then just recently, Vinegar Syndrome dropped their October releases in Blood Delirium.
Yes, which you picked, we covered for an episode.
We covered for an episode, and the absolute madness of that fucking movie. I am so glad to watch it without, was it Russian subtitles?
Yeah, Russian or Greek, but yeah.
Something.
It might have been Russian.
That was a terrible copy. I cannot wait to see that cleaned up.
Oh, yeah. You could see all the art that we kind of fawned over.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's going to be good.
I'm excited for that. So making things happen over here. Very exciting.
Yes. Trailblazers. We are. we put it out in the universe and people listen to our podcast.
No, it's putting the energy out there.
Exactly.
That's making it happen. I don't know.
Something's happening and it feels really good to see it come together.
Yeah. So speaking of Blu-ray releases... the film we're covering for this episode desperately needs a new Blu-ray release because the Blu-ray that it has for it has the most atrocious sound quality ever. And there were a few people that reached out and asked for a copy of it, which, you know, we sent. And apologies for the audio on that because it is a Blu-ray rip. It's terrible audio.
It's very quiet. Yeah, it's hard to hear some people talking.
Yeah, it is. And like there's like that hissing of, you know, it's bad. It needs a better Blu-ray than whoever put that Spanish one out. But so the film that we're talking about is Trapped from 1982, aka Baker County, USA. It does have a Blu-ray available. I don't recommend picking it up. For folks that do want to watch this, we do have an offer out to you until the end of this year, 2022. That if you would like a copy of it, just message us on Instagram or Twitter or Facebook and we can email you a copy of it. But hopefully it gets a better Blu-ray soon.
Yeah.
Because the whole reason that I picked this film is because of Henry Silva and he deserves better.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it looks great. The quality looks great. But yeah, you need to hear everything he says in this.
Everything. It's so important.
He's going hard. And I love it.
So hard in this and I love it. And so... we're probably going to spend a lot of time talking about Silva. The film itself is pretty straightforward. It's mostly a Hicksploitation movie, but it does definitely have some horror elements to it, especially when it comes to the kills in this. Mm-hmm. Trapped is about these four college kids. They one of them specifically, you know, we're introduced to him at the beginning of the film, and he's talking in a class about how wrong it is to murder people, no matter what the circumstances. And he gets all like riled up and heated about it. And his friend's like, hey, let's, you know, relax this weekend. Let's go on a camping trip. Let's go hiking up in the mountains. So the two of them plus two other girls, they head up there. They've got another friend who's going to be joining them the next day. Those four head up there. They end up witnessing a murder committed by this group of people who live in the mountains, moonshiners. And so they try to get the police involved, don't have any success with that. They end up getting captured by the murderers, led by Henry Silva's character, Henry Chatwill, which makes it easier to, you know, because I keep saying Henry,
so yeah,
be easy. It's a really basic plot. This is 100% about Silva's performance.
Oh, yeah. It's the only reason. I mean, I'm not going to say it's the only reason, but his performance alone is what increased my rating and enjoyment. I think the whole cast is actually on point, but sure, when Silva's on screen, you're like, oh, my God, this is...
Yeah.
He's made for this fucking movie.
He is.
It was all out war. Innocent students against a self-appointed lawman who wants them all wrapped. Unwilling witnesses. Now, anywhere they run, any place they hide, anytime they stop, they're trapped.
Murder, report a murder.
Trapped, starring Henry Silva as a one-man death machine.
So, getting into some of the film specifics, this was directed by William Fruitt. He's got a number of films that I do like. He did Death Weekend from 1976, which is the Canadian at Last House on the Left. I think that one's streaming on Cave of Forgotten Films still. He directed Spasms from 1983. I saw this one years ago, and the only thing I remember about it is there was too much Peter Fonda. And oh, everyone yeah. knows I hate Peter Fonda.
That's true.
So I can't recommend that one just for that reason. It's got a great fucking poster, though. I will say that.
It does.
It also has Oliver Reed.
It does, and that's always a bonus, but, you know,
too much.
Too much Peter Fonda. Sorry, can't. Killer Party, 1986, another one with a great poster.
Yeah, for sure.
Blue Monkey from 1987, which, you know, if you haven't seen that one, it's a bug movie. There is no monkey in that movie, so just FYI, folks. And then there was one that I saw you just watched, Funeral Home.
Yeah, I liked it. It's very slow. It doesn't show a child death, but it does have a dead kid like in a coffin, look very freaky.
Oh, okay. Does it die during the course of during the events of the film, or is it just like, oh, this kid died and then we're showing?
Yeah. I think it was like a flashback scene, and it's like a haunted scene. Cause the whole premise is it's about an old mansion, that used to be a funeral home mm-hmm. and this young girl comes back to help her grandmother turn it into a bed and breakfast.
I would stay at that bed and breakfast.
Yeah.
Former funeral home turned bed and breakfast.
Yeah. And you could see all the rooms, like the viewing rooms and stuff. Like it's definitely like the set is a funeral home, but it's fun to watch. I mean, I enjoyed it. It has low ratings, but because it does kind of just slumber along.
Sure.
But the horror elements are pretty effective.
Okay.
It's kind of like a Psycho type movie with like these multiple person. I don't know. You check it out. That's all I got.
Now, I mean, I'm really just more interested in finding a bed and breakfast that used to be a funeral home, like in real life now.
It's a very good idea.
Yeah. Let's go into business together, Lance. We both hate our jobs anyway.
Well, I guess we got to find a funeral home that's no longer around.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll be on the lookout. I'll call a real estate agent and get this going.
All right. We're on this. All right. The screenwriter is John Beard. He's only got one other film credit, which is My Bloody Valentine from 1981, which is a great film. Mm-hmm. So I'm surprised he doesn't have more. He is uncredited with another slasher from 1981, Happy Birthday to Me.
A lot of people seem tied to My Bloody Valentine, and we'll get into that.
Yeah. All right. Cinematography by Mark Irwin. He's got a lot of credits, about 85. He worked a lot with Cronenberg, which makes sense, you know, Canada and all. This is mm-hmm. a Canadian film. He did work on The Fly, Scanners, The Brood, Videodrome, The Dead Zone. He also did some other like more mainstream horror movies like Scream, The Blob from 1988, Wes Craven's New Nightmare, Fright Night Part 2, and a handful of Disney and family movies and comedies. So really kind of all over the place.
Great career.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, with just the Cronenberg stuff, but with Trapped, I mean, the cinematography looks great.
Yeah, it does. One crew member we don't normally talk about is the production design, but I wanted to bring this one up because it's done by Javier Torres Torija, and he's got like 160 something production design IMDb credits. And a lot of the films that we discussed in our episode on the Black Pimp, the Black Pit of Dr. M episode with Abraham, Ship of Monsters, Witch's Mirror, Batwoman, Even the Wind is Afraid, Night of the Bloody Apes, Man Without a Face. He worked on all of those films. And Trapped was actually his only non-Mexican production. He did work on this other film called Demonoid with a director from LA. And so I thought it was really interesting. He's got so many credits. Over 160, all Mexican films.
Yeah.
And then he's got this one in Canada. And so I was like, how the hell, how did this happen? So I messaged Abraham.
Oh, nice.
And here's how much I love Abraham. Because he messaged back and he was like, oh, let's talk about this. Can I call you? And I'm like, yeah, you can call me. So Abraham gave me a call and we talked about it. And he said, so he was like, well, I didn't have a chance to really look into this. I know who he is, but not sure how this happened. If I had to guess, it would be through some connection with the Demonoid director from Los Angeles. And then I also mentioned that, so in Demonoid, Samantha Eggar is in that film. And Samantha Eggar is also in The Brood. So, it could have been maybe through her that he got connected with someone in Canada to work on this film.
Right.
I thought way too much about it, but it just seems so odd to me.
It is. Yeah. It's bizarre how he has this huge career of just doing Mexican, a lot of horror, but just Mexican film. And then you get this random Canadian exploitation movie thrown in.
But, you know, you go where the work takes you. So there's that. Since we're on the subject of Abraham, I did want to also bring up for our listeners who are in Los Angeles, Abraham has curated a series of double features at the Academy Museum called Mexico Maleficarum. Mm-hmm. And you are missing out if you do not attend at least one of these.
Seriously.
The lineup for this is insane. He's got a number of double features, El Vampiro with Kronos, El Espejo de la Bruja with El Mundo de los Muertos, La Maldición de la Llorona with Poison for the Fairies, Ship of Monsters is in there, El Vampiro Sangriento. God, what else? So many. Santa Sangre, Black Pit of Dr. M is in there. Alucarda is the last one. I mean, good things. Like, I really hope some folks make it out for that. I hope all of those sell out, not just for like Abraham because he's our friend, but also to get more exposure to films like this.
Yeah. Somebody in Austin, get some programming like this together, reach out to Abraham and do something like this. Cause that programming sounds amazing.
I mean, we had a few of these that were at Fantastic Fest a few years ago.
That was probably one of my favorite years of Fantastic Fest. 100%. For sure.
Like Ship of Monsters on the big screen, pure fucking joy.
Yes.
If I haven't beat that drum enough on this podcast,
it's the best. You can't. Everybody has to see it.
Just saying, folks, we have our Horror Gives Back Mexico category. If you have not seen the Ship of Monsters, please
pick it.
Again, Mexico Maleficarum, tickets are on sale on the Academy Museum website. You can check it out. We'll put a link in show notes too for folks just in case. So getting into the cast, and I don't want to like knock everybody else, but this is really just about Henry Silva.
Yeah, it's his movie.
I did want to bring up, you know, Barbara Gordon as Miriam Chatwell in this. Is she supposed to be his mother?
She's his sister.
Sister, thank you. Okay, I must have missed something in the awful audio.
Yeah, he pointed that out. He's all, just because you're my sister, don't mean.
See, subtitles would help too. Anyway.
I watched it with headphones because it just wasn't working for me just on the screen.
Got it. Okay. But she was also in one of my favorite Cronenberg films, getting back to Canadian and Cronenberg, Dead Ringers.
Yeah, definitely one of my top three Cronenbergs.
Yeah. Which, you know, not many people would say that about Cronenberg, so...
Yeah, and maybe I have a thing for twins, but I think it's, you know, when you get actors or actresses playing you know, multiple parts as twin sisters. Barbara Steele does it a lot.
Yeah.
It's hard to pull off, but I think Jeremy Irons is like, it's one of the best.
He's so good in that. Yeah. It's, yeah, definitely in my top three, Cronenberg too.
Yeah. Nice. Aww. It's good soundtrack too. Like,
hell yeah.
Shore kills it every time. So,
yeah.
But yeah, Barbara Gordon is great in this.
So then we've got, you know, the 4+1 college kids who are all fine. They all do their roles just fine. But we're, you know, this episode was sparked by the recent passing of Henry Silva. So I just want to talk about him.
Sure.
Which, you know, may seem kind of rude to the people, the other actors that are still alive. But, you know, I don't care.
I mean, I have to say about all the other actresses, like not just like the college students, but a bunch of the women that are in that, you know, little hillbilly town, the roar town.
Yeah.
They all look like Tiffany Amber Thiessen to me. They all have like the Saved by the Bell to like look.
The Henry Chatwell's wife is like a blonde Tiffany Amber Thiessen. Yeah. 100%. Wow.
And then the girl and then the young woman who he's like going to sleep with in the very beginning that those kids are.
Yeah.
Like she looked like Tiffany Amber Thiessen. I'm like, what's going on here?
Well, maybe they purposefully cast. Maybe this is a whole nother level. Maybe they purposefully cast these women to imply inbreeding.
Well, that's, yeah.
Okay.
Because that's always the whole perception of these,
yeah,
these type of communities, these backwoods hillbillies. It's a stereotype that's out there and it happens. I mean, but it happens in the city too.
Yeah, it does.
But yeah, this is the Henry Silva show.
Yeah. So Henry Silva, nearly 100 film credits, very extensive television career. He also worked on Broadway. When he passed, someone tweeted something about him that I thought, and I don't know if like they stole this from somebody else or whatever, you don't know how like internet works and anything like that. But they said he had a face only the movies could love. And yeah, like he does have that very distinguishable face.
Mm-hmm.
It's made for movies, essentially. Oh, yeah. Like he looks like a villain.
Yeah, it's made for villain roles usually, which is what he played in most cases.
Typically was cast as a villain, every now and then played a police officer. But even when he was playing a police officer, it was usually an angry cop. So it's not even like when he smiles, it's so like sadistic looking.
And he smiles a lot in Trapped because he's having a good time torturing people and just being a fucking bull in a china shop. Like he's losing his mind in this, but yeah, it's fun to see him smile because he doesn't do it often in any of his roles.
He hardly ever does. But when he does, it's just like,
it's cute. Like, I'm like, God, this man, he's so good looking and Trapped. I feel like I love his look.
Absolutely. So Silva began acting in films and quite a few TV series in the early 1950s. Began making a name for himself as a character actor, especially in Westerns such as The Tall T, which is really good.
Love it.
The Law and Jake Wade, Sergeants 3, and The Bravados with Lee Van Cleef. And fun fact about him and Lee Van Cleef, they lived 2 blocks away from each other in Tarzana, California, and used to just eat together all the time.
Oh my gosh.
And like Silva would call him up and be like, I'm hungry. And Van Cleef would be like, come on over, I'll feed you. And I'm like, oh my God, can I please be invited?
To be a fly on the wall. Yeah, that would have been great to see.
Yeah.
Yeah, The Tall T, I recently rewatched that. And I love it. It's that Bud Bodicher Western with Randall Scott. Silva is just like this hot-tempered, hired hand who's just, I love him so much in that movie.
Yeah.
Like it's one of my favorite little performances by him. Yeah. He has a terrible name in it, though.
So Silva moved to Italy in 1965. He did actually, he was born in Spanish Harlem and lived there. He didn't actually start speaking English until around age 7 or 8. So I think like him being able to move to Italy just, you know, made it easy for him to work in those types of films. So he was, we've already kind of mentioned, like he's most well known for playing the villain. I think some of his most iconic villain roles are in Sharky's Machine, that screaming assassin scene where he's just like, and like shotguns through the wall. Alligator, as you know, the quint for that movie.
Yeah.
Love him in that. Above the Law with Steven Seagal, which I just, you know, John made me recently watch, I think earlier this year or last year.
Yeah. It's so good. Cody and I, as kids, would watch Steven Seagal movies way too much. And Above the Law is just great.
It's I mean, it's a lot of fun. And then I was like, oh my God, Henry Silva's in this. Like, John was just on a let's watch early Steven Seagal movies kick. And I was like, yeah, it's fine. He was in Bulletproof 1988 with Gary Busey, which I watched, I think, for June's Boytation.
Yeah. I still have never seen Bulletproof. I need to watch it.
It's hilarious.
Just because of that clip alone, obviously.
Yeah. Your worst nightmare, Butthorn.
McBain.
Danny Trejo, I think Danny yells Trejo. That. Yeah.
So those are some of the sort of non-Polizio Tecchi movies that he was in. He was also in Johnny Cool, which is one of the few leading roles that he played in. Because for the most part, he was supporting character, or it was like co-starring with other people. Like he rarely got a film where he was like the main star of the film.
Right.
But he always steals the show.
Yeah, that's true.
Because you look at something like Fernando De Leo's The Boss or The Italian Connection, Lenzi's Manhunt in the City, Almost Human, Freehand for a Tough Cop. Oh my God. Oh, Freehand for a Tough Cop. So I just watched this. And I thought there was going to be a little girl dying in it, but she's just, you know, sick, kidney issues or whatever. Mm-hmm. So there's this scene in it where she's like locked up in a basement room or whatever. And Silva opens the door and she's like, mommy, mommy. And Henry Silva's character is like, shut up, you little bitch. I'm like, fucking love it.
Watch list.
And, yeah, but so these are the films that I think most people who are fans of Silva know him from, is these, you know, Eurocrime or Polizio Tecchi movies.
Right.
It's just, they always satisfy. Like, there's obviously there are some that are better. I think De Leo is probably like top tier when it comes to those. I like a lot of Lenzi's too. They tend to be a little bit meaner, so I like them for that. Some other ones like Crime Busters, which was another one that I watched for. It was Junesploitation either this year or maybe last year. Because Henry Silva was a category for Junesploitation last year, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I watched that, and that was with him and Antonio Sabato, and it was fine. I've never watched a movie in that genre and been like, that was fucking awful.
Yeah, you know? No, they're always entertaining.
Yeah.
And if you have Henry Silva in it.
Yeah, that automatically elevates a film, because no matter what he is in, he always brings it. You know, he always is entertaining. He just always gives it 100%.
Yeah. He's great too in Enzo Castellari's Escape from the Bronx.
That's right. Yeah.
I love The Bronx Warrior and then this follow up. He's such a great little villain in it. Have you seen Lust in the Dust? Paul Bartel's Lust in the Dust. Mm-mm. With Tab Hunter and Divine?
No.
Henry Silva's in it. Very comedic performance, like, which is also very rare to see, you know, him smile, but also, you know, have like a comedic role. And he just nails it. Like, he's just going hard for it. And then Dick Tracy.
That's right. Yeah. I was, I haven't seen Dick Tracy since it came out.
Yeah. I watched it a couple of years ago. It doesn't hold up very well. I mean, the makeup is just astounding. Like, mm-hmm. It's just so much fun to watch. Henry Silva's great in it. It's a small role. But I was infatuated with that movie as a kid because of the makeup.
Yeah.
And it was like Madonna at her best. That was like her like a prayer phase, which is my favorite Madonna. Oof. And she's, you know, she's not good in the movie, but.
Well, no. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was that one with her and the tiger? Who's That Girl?
There's a tiger in Who's That Girl?
Right.
That's someone with Roseanne Arquette.
No, that's Desperately Seeking
Susan.
Who's that? It's like it's when she's got her like short bleach blonde hair. And then I think it's the guy from American Werewolf in London is the guy. And she's just like this obnoxious character. And she's got a pet tiger or something like that.
I don't know if I've seen Who's That Girl.
It's not good. I'm not recommending. I don't know why I even went down this route. We need to move away from Madonna. So in addition to film credits, TV, Broadway, Silva has also done some voice acting, specifically as the character Bane in Batman, for the Batman and Superman TV series in the 90s.
I did not know that.
I have never watched.
Is it the animated Batman, the animated series?
Mm-hmm. Oh, from the 90s. Yeah. But I'm not going to watch them because
they're great.
Henry Silva isn't over it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they were great when I watched them while it was on, but I had no idea he was Bane.
I'll think about it.
There's a lot of seasons.
Yeah, that's, I don't want to commit to that. I just
find the Bane episodes.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think he was in like that many of them. So maybe I'll just watch the Bane episodes. And it's always fun to hear Henry Silva's like actual voice, because so many of the films you watch him in, he's dubbed. So
right. Not Entrapped.
Yeah, Entrapped. You get to hear his voice, and that's the best thing. So let's get into the film then, right after this promo from our network.
You're listening to the Prescribed Films Podcast Network, home to hundreds of hours of free podcast entertainment. The shows on this network all have a common goal: providing you with the best discussions about movies and other forms of entertainment media. The PFPN hopes to fill your earholes with audio joy. Visit our website with links to all the other amazing shows at www.thepfpn.com. Thanks for listening.
Lance, I am fully expecting some Henry Chatwell impersonations from you this episode.
Oh, yeah. I think I'm going to give it a go.
Okay.
Because, yeah, again, this is Henry Silva, and he's given us this, like, where does this take place? Kentucky or I don't even know. It's like an Appalachian.
I'm just saying Appalachia.
Right. And he, the very first, you know, the first scene is basically him checking on traps, you know, checking the traps, but he's obviously there to hook up with just the young, like, townswoman, girl, tiny girl, and these other, like, hillbillies are following to watch him. And the first line he utters is, it's Henry Silva up close, mm-hmm. giving it his all, and these strange accents that come out throughout the movie, but he's like, I'll kill you, you bastard! I'm gonna tear your goddamn head off! And then it's like these guys running off, but he has so many great lines in this, and the accent that he uses, like, is it real? I don't know, but Henry, I believe it's real. Like, Henry Silva just makes it up and makes it so effective. One of my favorite lines is where I think he's getting ready to kind of torture that welfare officer, which mm-hmm. we'll kind of get into, but he's like, he yells at his friends, hey, come on over. The fun is here now. The fun is here now, but it's the fun is here now. Like, it's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have more, which I'll probably do throughout the episode. Okay, I'm not going to lay it all out for everybody.
Yeah, right, no, we gotta trickle them throughout.
Yeah, you guys have to stay tuned. Yeah.
So the Appalachia accent, he gets it right sometimes, but it changes so much throughout the movie, is fine, and I love that about it too. But yeah, there are some parts when he, you know, he says "nah," like you know, for now, and like here is here.
And shut up is like, shut up.
Yeah. I love, you know, when he's just yelling at his sister, the woman, what you done?
Get out of my road, is what he said. Yeah, that whole scene is intense because, you know, that's where you see the whole frontier justice mentality come mm-hmm. out. And that's what's terrifying about these type of movies, these backwoods exploitation.
Yeah.
Is basically everybody's related, you know. In this case, Henry is the older brother to the sheriff. So the sheriff kind of turns a blind eye and they just kind of run things their own way.
Right.
But when he's yelling at his sister, that's when he starts opening up saying, a law has been broken, the law of God, you know, basically a man slept with his wife and he deserves, you know, the wrath of God, you know. And, you know, he makes the rules.
Yeah. Well, he makes the laws to suit himself.
Right.
And he even, you know, he says that himself, but then by the end, everyone turns on that for him after he kills Miriam's, is it her husband?
Yeah, Leonard,
okay.
I think.
Leonard, okay.
Who's the true hero in this, by the way.
Yeah, it's hard to pick one, and he's barely in it, and I guess he's the hero here.
Yeah.
But yeah, Silva is basically like, it's the law, or it's supposed to be the way I say it is.
Yeah. That line was like, cause some guy's like, you're taking the law in your own hands. You know, Henry, it can't be this way. And he's like, it's supposed to be the way I say it is. I'm like, holy shit. The whole perception that he's basically just terrorizing this whole town. Cause you get the idea that people, cause he had supposedly killed another man before mm-hmm. who did something in the town and they thought he let him go. They just like lock the doors. Like when he's on a rage, they lock the doors. And when they peek out the window to see what's happening, he's sitting there on the shotgun, like, put your damn head back in your house. You know, like he's just taking over this town.
Yeah.
And that's scary.
It is. I think it adds another element to, and I think it kind of adds a little bit of the horror element to like a traditional exploitation film, because a lot of those films, a lot of, you know, the terror of that, you know, you think of films like Deliverance,
right,
where, you know, not just like the people who are chasing after them or terrorizing them, but the people sort of like on the outside who are complacent with it and just like, let those people be. And they're just, that's just how they are kind of thing. And the fact that you can't go down to the police station and get help and that sort of thing. It's like, you know, and I have to say, you know, the college kids going back to get their stuff, it's like, you know that they're doomed the second that they decide they're going to do that. And I'm sorry, fellas, listen to women, because the girls are like, the girls are like, leave it. I don't care about our stuff. And then the guys are like, oh, let's go in this cave. Like, can we not?
Exactly. Like, that's what I kept thinking too, especially on a rewatch. I loved watching just the college women, the girls, because there's a lot of eye rolling going on, especially when they're in the sheriff's office, you know, reporting this murder they saw, and all the men are kind of just talking over them and they're like rolling their eyes and like, let's just go. Like, what would you do, Erica, if you were like in a camping site in the forest, obviously like in this kind of, you know, very isolated area, and you see a bunch of guys with shotguns chasing the guy who's tarred and feathered and kill him? Are you going to like immediately run to the local sheriff? Are you going to get the fuck out of here? Like you should
leave.
I know. Maybe I'm a wimp, because these guys are like, yeah, let's go get our stuff. Like, we got to call this in. A murder happened. And then they start arguing with the townspeople. Like,
yeah, if you go to the police, like, fine, I will give you this. You left. You went to the police station. You did the right thing.
Right.
I guess. I don't know. Depending on where you're at. You go to try to report it to the police. The police aren't helping you. You need to realize, like, oh, okay, they're not going to help. They're not going to do anything. I need to leave and go to a big town.
Exactly.
And report it there.
I mean, maybe it's out of jurisdiction, but it doesn't. At this point, just get the fuck out.
Yeah.
Like, it's clear. Read the room. Like, before they even go to the sheriff's department or sheriff's office, they go to like the first phone they find, and there's a guy there that just hangs it up. He's like, you got to go.
Yeah.
You didn't see what you thought you saw. And they're like arguing with this man.
Why would you? Yeah. When you're out of your element like that, years ago, when I was in my early 20s, I was dating a guy and we went on a road trip together, doing like national parks and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. We're in the middle of fucking Colorado somewhere. And he's like, let's, you know, find a place to camp, like get out the map. This is pre, like, you know, I got Google Maps. I can just look something up here, whatever. So this was us, you know, literally having like a paper map, all that.
Yeah. And that's what makes movies like this even more scary. There's no technology out there. Right. You're just kind of stuck in the elements.
Exactly. So I pick out this like camping site. It was called like Devil's Point or something like that. Cause obviously I was like, oh, I want to stay at
Devil's Point. It's either called Devil's Point or Where Children Die.
Yeah, Hill. Something like that. Yeah. So it was called Devil Something. And I was like, oh, this is like, you know, looks like it's about 20 miles away. So we drive up, we pass a like general store, and like, okay, let's stop and get some stuff. Go in. And it is exactly like what you would expect in like the middle of fucking nowhere. I know Colorado is not Appalachia, but it had that absolute vibe. It's run down general store. Old dude sitting on the fucking porch, spitting tobacco,
right,
staring you down.
Is there a banjo going somewhere?
There was no banjo, but that would have been too on point, but I'm not going to embellish the story for that reason. So, you know, we go in, we buy a couple things, and one, like the cashier's like, oh, where are y'all headed? And I was just like, I shouldn't tell them where we're going in my head, and just said, oh, we're going to a friend's cabin somewhere, whatever.
There ain't no cabins here. You lie.
And it was kind of like, I got the side eye when I like made something up, and but luckily she didn't say anything after that. So anyway, we leave, got out of there alive, and we go up to where it says, you know, the Devil's Point or whatever campground is. And there's an entrance to it. It's, you know, got like a pole there that you kind of have to like lift up to get into the campground area.
Right.
But the little booth that's next to the pole to lift up is like this little wood shack with like windows, and all the windows are broken. Okay. And I'm like staring at it, and I'm like, we are not fucking staying here. Like,
you didn't go with you.
No,
it was you. You've seen enough horror movies.
I've seen enough horror movies. I saw that and I was like, turn around. We're leaving. We are not fucking camping here. I will pay for a goddamn motel tonight. I don't give a fuck.
Right.
And so, yeah, we ended up leaving. We had to drive back past the general store. We needed gas. We were running out of gas too. That was another issue because he refused to listen to me when I said we need to get gas. Long. Anyway.
Right.
But we passed by there. We could get gas at the general store. I'm like, we are not fucking stopping there. It's downhill. We can make it to the gas station that was at the bottom of this hill, like 5 miles away. It's fine. We made it to that gas station, got gas, got a motel room, and I'm alive.
So I think, I mean, that's a good story. And I think it proves how effective these exploitation movies are, because it's a perception everybody, not everybody, but you know, most people have because of the movies like Deliverance and Trapped and Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Walter Hill's Southern Comfort.
Oh yeah.
Like there's so many movies that kind of build it up, these isolated areas just full of these inbred murdering people. And you know, it's a stereotype. But you know, I believe it happens. Like I believe it's out there. You know, people, I do believe frontier justice is very real, which is what like Trapped kind of it focuses in on. Like there's no law out there. I mean, there shouldn't be. Like, this is your land. This is your forest. This is where you live. And if you want to shoot somebody for stealing something from your trap or fucking your wife, you do it.
Yeah.
Who's going to stop you? Not these college fucking kids.
Or even your local sheriff or whoever.
Yeah, not your little brother, the sheriff.
One other thing that I do really like about this, and they're very basic and simple, but I appreciate it whenever films do this, is all the setup and payoffs.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, even like you mentioned, like all the bear traps in the film in the beginning, literally the film is called Trapped too. But, you know, we see those and people almost, you know, step in them. And eventually someone, they step in them, the tar and feathering, the moonshine and the bait in the like cellar.
Yeah,
all of these things are set up. And so it's like, you know what's coming at the end. So none of it is surprising. But it's like, I appreciate that when there are like setups and payoff. Because not like, well, there's plenty of things that annoy me in films. But that's a big one that bothers me. It's like, you spent so much time focusing on this, or like you set that up, or you gave that element some attention, but you never did anything with it. And like this film does that with pretty much everything.
Yeah, it breaks up the moods and the scenes and the setup, like you said, very well. The editing's really cool because it starts off with, you know, you're in this isolated area with Henry Silva. You get to know, like, this guy's, don't fuck around with this guy. Mm-hmm. And you're cutting to the college kids, and it keeps going back and forth until they finally meet. And it's just really effective the way that happens.
Yeah.
Like, in the beginning, there's the scenes that jumped from when Henry's torturing this welfare officer, this welfare agent, for sleeping with his wife, who he ends up killing. You know, he's tar and feathering him. He's just being really cruel and torturing him. And then you just kind of cut to the kids, the college kids, setting up camp, laughing. It's like, oh, you know what's coming. Yeah. You know what's you know, these guys are going to meet. But the editing and the pacing is really well done and Trapped.
Yeah. And I think as far as like a character arc, the main college guy, the one at the beginning who was like, murder's wrong, no matter what, Roger.
Yeah.
He's the only one with a character arc, because obviously if you set some, again, another setup, if you set someone up to say like, you can't, no, under no circumstances is it okay to kill someone.
You're no matter how desperate you are, desperation cannot justify for taking a man's life or a person's life. Yeah.
And like, so it's like, you know, that's coming, you know, like, oh, he's going to be pushed to a point where he's going to have to kill somebody.
Right.
And so, again, you know that's coming, but I do appreciate when they actually give you the payoff.
Right. The ending, I felt it was a little silly. I mean, because I have to admit, I mean, I understand why it happened, but when you do see Roger in the very beginning talking to his professor, and he's very pissed off at his professor, who I think is funny because he's basically like yelling at his professor, you might think it's justified, but I don't. And the professor kind of leans back. He's all, sure. Okay. Like knowing that this kid's going to go full on Rambo here in a bit on hillbillies. But you know, you could kind of miss, like, it's such a quick scene that maybe you're not even listening to what the kid's really saying. You just like, oh, okay, these college kids are going to go camping. Mm-hmm. But at the end, when he does finally go Rambo and starts killing,
yeah,
and then they're watching the fire. There has to be a fire at the end.
Of course.
And then you hear the dialogue again over his head. Yeah, I was like,
you don't need that.
You don't really need that, but it's funny. And I respect what you did there.
It's funny. Yeah. I do love the ending. I mean, I know we're jumping around here a bit, but the antenna kill is, yes, like, that's like straight out of a horror film. That's better than a lot of kills that I've seen in horror movies.
Yeah. It's the best kill in this movie, and it's an accidental kill.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, obviously he wants to get away from, I think it was Jeb, or maybe one, it's one of the hillbilly guys, yeah, that are after Roger, and he's on a roof and steps on this antenna and it impales Jeb, I think is what his name might have, yeah, been. And it's like the best kill of the whole movie.
It falls down. It swings down and impales him. And then I guess it's from the back, it impales him.
Yes.
And then it pushes him into the building. You see him just like twitching.
Yeah.
And then he falls to the ground and he's still twitching. And I'm like, this is fucking great.
Yeah. All the death scenes, like the victims just act really well. Like in that case, he's like struggling to figure out what's happening. You can see it in his face. He's, yeah, like gurgling and like walking a little bit. And he just finally collapses and starts kind of convulsing.
Yeah.
And then the welfare guy he gets the hot tar and feathered, mm-hmm, the welfare agent that sleeps with Henry's wife,
Tiffany
Amber Thiessen. I have to respect Henry Chatwell in this because he saves bullets. His whole MO of just like killing is just bludgeoning people with a blunt object.
Yeah.
Cause he hits this guy in the head with this huge limb and the guy is like stunned and it's like scary to watch. Like it looks like a real head injury. Like the actor's just going for it. Even though he's covered like in tar and feathers, there's not a whole lot of expression, but the way he's struggling and then he just bashes his head in the back, pretty good kills.
Yeah. But when Silva at the end, or Chatwell, gets tarred at the end, you can see his expression even through that.
Well, what's funny was when he's tarred, there's these perfect like white, like,
oh, of course,
circles around his eyes and his mouth. Like, so they like applied it and it doesn't run in his eyes at all.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's losing his mind and you can see that he's still Henry Silva.
Oh, just my God. I mean, as soon as you knew that was coming. Him wielding an axe covered in tar, screaming like a maniac and chasing after Roger. I'm like, yes, this is what I am here for.
Yeah.
That ending, I love it so, so much.
It's fantastic.
He doesn't get feathered, but like he does get tarred. He does get like, he's just running around wielding the axe. And then Roger finally is like, oh, here's a conveniently hanging lantern. Let me throw this at him. And he gets lit on fire, falls into the moonshine cellar and it explodes. And I'm like, this is perfect. This is a perfect ending for this movie. And I love it.
Yeah. And beforehand too, he is just losing his fucking mind, trying to kill this kid, Roger, driving his truck into like the market, the convenience store in the town.
Back and forth.
He's doing whatever it takes, not caring any type of destruction he's doing.
It's like Jaws ramming the boat.
Exactly. But my favorite scene that obviously involves Henry Silva, and I think it sums up the movie perfectly, is when Henry is getting ready to go like medieval on that welfare agent guy's ass. And he looks up and he says, Jeb, bring me my finest corn liquor. and a fucking banjo starts playing in the background over it. And like the camera's zooming in, his face is dirty. He's kind of smirking. I'm like, this is what Trapped is about.
Yes. And that's what I love too, is that this is what Henry Silva is about too. You know, he can play the coolest Italian gangster to a backwoods malicious bumpkin, whatever.
Country, a blumpkin.
Blumpkin, whatever you want to call it. I mean, it's just, that's what I love about him. And that's what's so great about him, is that every single role he is in, he is 100% believable in that role.
Yes.
You know, there are certain actors who it's like you cast them in something And I have a hard time believing that person in that role. Perfect example is Olivia Munn as a fucking scientist in the new Predator movie, which I'm like, okay, she's a scientist.
In Prey?
Predator? The Predator? The one, the new two, not Prey, the one that came. Anyway, she's a scientist, and it's like Thomas Jane. And anyway, that fucking movie. I hate that movie.
Thomas Jane's great.
He's fine. But like, I mean, there. I know that's just the first one that popped in my head where I'm like, well, that was poorly cast.
Right. But no matter what, like, so Henry Silva's up for the challenge and he's going to deliver what he's cast, what role he's cast into.
Yeah. And he you know, and that's the thing too, is like never acting like you are above something.
Right.
Like, yeah, I'll play some fucking backwoods moonshine drinking hick. Like,
well, Paul Bartel's Lust in the Dust is another perfect example because he's just basically just competing with, you know, Divine and Tab Hunter, who are just really going at full camp. And Henry Silva's like, yeah, let's do this.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
I do too.
Love him as an actor.
Anything else you have in your notes?
No.
No more impressions?
I mean, no, I have a couple lines here, but I think I've done enough.
All right. That's fair.
Well, I'll be some bitch. I'm a fucker, boy. Like, goddamn, Henry Silva, you're going for it.
Like, yeah, when he kidnapped, when he's got the girl and like he's trying to lure out Roger.
Yeah.
Oh my God, when he starts, I'm gonna fuck her.
Yeah, I'm a fucker. And that's working. Roger's all, you know, he's broing out, college boy, but he's like probably internally confused. Like, do I kill him? This is a desperate situation, but it's not morally right. I don't know.
Yeah.
Great stuff.
So good. So what are you doing for double feature then?
Okay. Double feature. So I was thinking of another like backwoods hillbilly horror, like 2000 Maniacs, Herschel Gordon Lewis, who I like, that movie's great, or Southern Comfort.
Yeah.
But since your pick was solely for Henry Silva, I have to make it a Silva double feature. And I'm going with what we've already talked about, 1980s Alligator, directed by Lewis Teague.
Love it.
Yeah. Starring the great Robert Forster, obviously. I think everybody has already seen it for the most part, but if you haven't, it's about a baby pet alligator who's flushed down the toilet by a kid's dad because it pooped behind the hamper. That's what pet alligators do.
Yep.
And in the city sewer, it begins kind of feeding on these dead animal carcasses, which were used in laboratory experiments. So they're pumped full of these growth hormones, and the alligator grows into this huge beast and terrorizes the city. And fucking Henry Silva is called in, playing Colonel Brock, this take no shit, big game hunter, and he's out to kill the alligator. So instead of like hunting an alligator in the sewers, like he does an alligator, he's hunting men who fuck his wife and college kids in the backwoods are trapped.
There you go.
So this is like a gun-toting Henry Silva takes charge double feature. And he's great in Alligator. His screen time's a little too short, but again, no matter how long he's on screen in any movie, he makes the movie.
He does.
Yeah. And it's worth watching. So
yeah.
Yeah. This is on Shudder right now. Shout Factory has that great, fantastic Blu-ray. Mm-hmm. But Alligator and Trapped, Henry Silva.
I like
double
it.
Feature.
I went the same route. Henry Silva double feature all the way.
Like, yes.
That's the correct answer for this episode. So I picked one of, you know, and we didn't necessarily like do what's your top five Henry Silva movies or roles or performances, because it's so hard because he's great in everything.
Right.
So it really comes down to, well, what are my favorite movies with Henry Silva in them? And obviously he plays villains a lot of the time. So I picked another one where he is a villain, but he's also kind of not. He is despicable in it, though. So I picked Cry of a Prostitute from 1974, directed by Andrea Bianchi. It's, you know, Eurocrime by way of Yojimbo. It's a gangster, Tony. He's in the middle of a feud between two mafia families, and he manipulates both of the families into believing he's on their side. He does this whistle before he's about to kill anybody. He sexually assaults Barbara Boucher inside of a cow carcass. Like, it's
what? Yes.
I mean, it's rough, like, but I mean, it's one of my favorite films with him in it. And like he does in every role that he's in, he brings it 100% and he's completely believable in this. And so I love it. Henry Silva double features all around.
Yes. You can't go wrong with picking any movie that Henry Silva's in.
You really can't.
I guess Trapped and Lust in the Dust might be a little weird. I keep going back to Lust in the Dust. That'd be a weird pair up, but it'll work.
I mean, there was even one that I watched because I was just like, oh, I'm going to watch some Henry Silva for this episode that I haven't seen before. And The Falling Man from 1968, very young, you know, 1968, mm-hmm. and takes place in San Francisco, I believe. But he's playing a police investigator. His son gets killed and in a flashback. So it was actually on my list for that reason, too. But there's a scene of him, and I shared it with J&B at the movies on Instagram, of him just chugging a bottle of J&B.
Yeah.
And I was like, hell yeah, that's what I'm here for. That's the movie I needed to watch when celebrating Henry Silva, the man.
Yes.
So folks, if you haven't, you know, seen Henry Silva in too much, you really can't go wrong with anything that he's in. I think if I had to recommend anything, if you haven't seen, I don't know, The Italian Connection or any of the films we picked for our double features, mm-hmm. The Boss.
The Boss is good.
Goddamn. I mean, it's hard to just...
I mean, even his later stuff where, you know, when actors like this who have these genre films get older, they start appearing in Fred Williamson movies.
Right.
I watched one called Day of the Assassin that stars a super old like Chuck Connors and Glenn Ford and Richard Roundtree was in it. Mm-hmm. And it feels like a po' boy, like Fred Williamson directed and written movie, but they're so much fun. And again, Henry Silva is just always on, no matter what age, no matter what role, no matter what genre. You can't go wrong.
Ever. Never go wrong with Henry Silva.
Dame, I'm pleased you remember me, Mr. Wayne. Can't believe how I look forward to this. Though I was hoping for more of a fight. But what could I expect from a killer of children?
All right, so Lance.
So my pick.
Next episode, yeah.
This has another actor who I feel like you just can't go wrong. So we are in October. I was initially going to pick something kind of Halloween-y, but I kind of wanted something like a little more classic horror feel. And I love watching black and white horror movies mm-hmm. during October. So something older. So I'm going with The Third Eye from 1966.
Oh,
it's directed by Mino Greene. And it stars a very beautiful Franco Nero.
Can't go wrong.
Yes. So he plays a young count, and he's also a taxidermist. He's living with his cranky mother, and they're made in this huge castle. And Franco Nero's character is engaged to marry a woman who he is madly in love with. But the trouble is his mother is very jealous and doesn't approve of this woman. Neither does the housekeeper. So they kind of plot separately in their own ways to make sure the wedding doesn't happen. And one of them kills the fiance. This isn't really a spoiler. This is kind of the whole movie setup. Well, he loves taxidermy and he loved his fiance. So you might imagine what happens next. And he goes into this tailspin of crazy thoughts and just actions. And he starts like dating and killing other women. And we'll get into all the details, what he does, what happens to his mother, what happens when his dead fiance's twin sister shows up.
Oh, there's a twin.
Yes. Yeah, it's a quick little 60s horror. It's not the 98-minute runtime that Letterboxd has listed. It's like 84 minutes.
Okay.
So you can keep cramming in horror gives back movies. This one actually fits in a few categories. You know, Italian horror. It is it's Italian horror, 60s horror. Even slasher would work. But I'm looking forward to talking about it.
This has been on my watch list forever.
Yeah.
Yay, thank you.
Franco Nero, too. And I know how much you love
him. I do. Oh, I love that. You picked him because I brought up He Might Die, didn't you?
Yeah, we did Henry Silva. I mean, if Franco Nero passes, obviously we're gonna do another movie.
I mean, yeah. But I'm excited to watch this. Like, don't spoil it for me and tell me if there's necrophilia, because I would love to be just surprised.
I'm not gonna spoil any of that. I will tell you though, it is currently on YouTube with subtitles. It has 240 views on Letterboxd. There's a DVD out there too, I think, but the YouTube upload looks sharp, looks great. The subtitles they make sense. Like, it's not like the auto-generated stuff. So yeah, The Third Eye, 1966.
Hell yeah. If you're not already, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, all at Unsung Horrors. You can follow me on Letterboxd, Instagram, and Twitter at Hex Massacre.
I'm on Letterboxd, Instagram, and Twitter at L Shibe.
Keep those Horror Gives Back picks coming, folks. And we'll see you back in a couple weeks for
The Third Eye.
Thanks for listening, y'all. Bye.
Go on, get.
I stand on the corner with the low-down blues, a great big hole in the bottom of my shoe. I love to be your son. Let me be your son, dog, or I won't be your man at all. Look here, Sal, I know you. Run down stocking in a white shoe. I'd let it be your son. I'd let it be your son, dog, or I won't be your man at all. I'd let it be your son, dog. I was down the wild with setting on the law, fangling trigger and eye on the hook. I'd let it be your son. I'd let me be your son, dog, or I won't be your man at all. I'd let it be your son, dog. I pulled the trigger and the gun said go. Shot fell over in Mexico. I'd let it be your son. Let me be your son, dog, or I won't be your man at all. I'd let it be your son, dog.
Hey, it's Death by Video.
I'm Phil.
I'm Kit.
And I'm Graham, saying welcome to our podcast full of merry movie mayhem.
Ever wonder what an Irish kung fu movie would look like?
It's called Fatal Deviation, and we covered it.
Ever wonder what a movie about a thousand cats would look like?
It's called Night of a Thousand Cats, and we covered it.
And it stars Hugo Stiglitz. Listen to Death by Video to hear us discuss and dissect some of the weirdest, wildest, and wackiest films ever made. All this and more on Death by Video! Woo!